Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome into another edition of the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. I'm James Boger, hosting you guys tonight, joined as always by Tom Bovee. It's going to be a two-person show tonight on the heels of one of the more, I don't know if exciting is the word, but the most lacrosse-centric weekends in a while, and that's not to take away from anything about Memorial Day weekend, and that's kind of where I want to lead off the show. We didn't get to do a show last week, but I feel like the lacrosse community is impacted in a lot of ways by people who are involved in our nation's armed forces. When you look at people, just the top of my head, just because I'm from the Charlotte area, I mean, guys like Garrett Thole, who wasn't able to play for the Hounds this year, guys like Jeremy Boltis, there are countless other people who have done so much for our country and also contributed to the sport of lacrosse. They're innumerable to count, whether it be on a high school level, college level, pro level. And so we didn't get the chance to say thank you last week. Want to go ahead and do that for Tom, Tim Thomas, Joe Keegan, everyone at Lax Dirt, and just say thank you to all of our armed services, whether it be lacrosse players or not. We have a special connection to those who are connected to the lacrosse community, but that does not diminish the value and the hard work that everyone else puts in. And I just want to make sure that that's the first thing that we get out of the way. And then as we move on to, I guess, lesser gravitas things and the things that we're here to talk about, I guess there's no real seamless way to do it. But this weekend was a lacrosse weekend that was kind of amazing for a couple different reasons. We're going to be joined by Chris Bocklet at 8:10. And before we do that, Tom, I do want to get into one of the more interesting storylines in the weekend, and it wasn't professional at all. It was Denver winning the NCAA championship, bringing the trophy to the West Coast, kind of getting the monkey off their back with guys like Wes Berg playing instrumental roles on that team. For the next couple minutes, I kind of want to talk about that just because Maryland and Denver are two teams that I think you and I associate with having a strong lacrosse background. However, the casual fan doesn't really see that. How big was Denver winning this championship, and what did you make of kind of what they were able to do over the course of a tournament that featured a lot of really strong teams over the course of a couple weeks?
Well, call it what you want, but right now Denver is the lacrosse mecca. I mean, we just had the Worlds there, which is the biggest event in lacrosse every 4 years. It's the Lacrosse Olympics. They got to host that. They followed that up with the Denver Outlaws winning the MLL title last year, which is a huge deal, their first title. Now you've got the Pioneers winning their first title and you know, the first title west of the Mississippi. This is a big deal. This is a huge deal for the sport. It's a big deal. You got your traditional hotbeds, your big-time areas, but there is nowhere right now that's bigger in the lacrosse world than Denver and that whole community.
Yeah, one thing that's really interesting is about how the entire telecast, everyone was saying that the championship's headed west. Everything's headed west. Well, now that the LXM bandwagon has kind of disbanded, so to speak, does the fact that Denver being what you call the hotbed, and I don't think you're wrong in saying that, open up the floodgates to having more teams be out that way? Because as of right now, if you're a West Coast guy, like, with job restrictions and everything like that, unless you're willing to pay big bucks, like, those players are playing for Denver. You see a lot of Denver alumni playing for the Denver Outlaws. How much do you think this is kind of the tipping point to where the MLL and other leagues could possibly establish themselves more west than Denver?
You know, the game is moving west, the entire game, lacrosse as a whole. That's an easy thing to say, though, because it started in the Northeast. So you can say the game is moving south. You can say the game is moving west. But that's because for 50 years, the game was played on the Northeast coast. So, yeah, the game is growing. It's evolving. It's getting bigger. We're adding players. And the logical direction is to go where the people are. And, yeah, we're heading west. I'd love to see another MLL franchise somewhere along the West Coast, somewhere in an area farther away. You know, Denver has shown that they can succeed in a non-traditional area, and they have success in both the indoor and outdoor league, now in college. We're seeing a ton of success moving west, and I think that needs to continue as the leagues want to grow, and you want to grow your fan base. You and I, last year at the All-Star game, met a fan who came all the way out from California. And I think that's just going to continue. Is if you're going to grow your fan base, you got to grow in the way that people are. And that's going to be the next big step where MLL decides to place its next team. You talked about this weekend a little bit. We've seen that these rosters are ripe for expansion. There's so many of these great guys that aren't getting to play nearly enough, and you know, we talked to Chris Bachlin in a minute. His brother is a perfect example. I mean, we're talking a guy who was their leading goal scorer that now is kind of out of a job because John Grant Jr. came back, and there is no replacing John Grant Jr. The sport will not have another player like him in the near future. But it's just incredible, the movement and the growth of the game. And yeah, I think this is a big deal. The game is heading west. And it's going to show these schools that if you put the effort in, you put the money in, you put the time in, you can grow a successful lacrosse program. Now, it's going to be tough for any other school to find a coach like Bill Tierney to come out and just jumpstart a program. But, I mean, that's what we're seeing is these, you know, obviously in college lacrosse, coach makes all the difference in the world because the same coaches are the ones putting the same teams in the dance.
Yeah, and I really think that you hit the nail on the head when you talk about expansion. I think that's the next logical step in this conversation, and it's one that I'm going to casually avoid because I think there's been a lot of talk about expanding the teams out west, quote-unquote, to a place like Houston, who is hosting an All-Star game, or a place, you know, like Atlanta, who is hosted championship games. And I think maybe the next logical step is to head further west, but that's going to be an announcement MLL is going to make, because for as much speculation, we could be talking about Tupelo, Mississippi for all we care. We have no inside knowledge as far as what they're doing, so I kind of want to sidestep that just for a second and talk to you about the NCAA championships. We don't normally get to talk about this for a long period of time, but it seems like a logical next step after that. Denver is obviously a team that made huge strides and got kind of the monkey off their back, similar to what the Outlaws did. Tom, real quick before we get Chris on, who are some other teams and who are some other players who really kind of highlighted your experience in this NCAA tournament, which was kind of fascinating moving forward? Who are some of the people and teams that stood out to you?
You know, you're seeing your MLL draft picks shine, and it's not just the guys at the top of the draft. It's the guys all the way down. These teams are getting better about scouting. They're getting better about recruiting. Players now know the league isn't, you know, a weekend warrior thing. You're not having huge roster turnovers like crazy. There's some staying power now, so they're convincing players. We got to see Lyle Thompson play his first MLL action this weekend. But it's still your big-name schools that are producing these big-name stars. Your top 5 to 10 programs with the top 5 to 10 coaches are kicking out the players that are going to be the guys to watch. I mean, yes, we find some diamonds in the rough, and we find some great players at smaller schools. But, you know, I alluded to the fact that coaching makes all the difference at the college level. Well, you know, these coaches are going to develop these guys and get them ready, and that's what's going to help them find success in the MLL.
Yeah, there have been a lot of teams and players that we've looked to this past year, and they've all been kind of amazing to see how the transitions happen, because in the past we've seen people kind of not be able to step into a role in the MLL and make it to where they are as impactful as I think the grand illusions of having a first-round pick can be. And with that being said, I with grand illusions of first-round picks and players who you really want to see step forward, let's welcome in the University of Virginia's Chris Bachlin, also of the Denver Outlaws. And Chris, there's been a little gap between times that we were able to talk to you, so forgive me if my first couple questions are a little rudimentary. I'm sure you've heard this all before. First off, thanks for joining us. How's it going tonight?
Oh, doing well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for the time. And first off, like I said, this is going to be a question I'm sure you ask all the time. But you have the opportunity in Denver to play with your brother Matt and play and kind of have the Bocklet crew together in Denver. We were able to Tom and I were able to see you in Ohio, and it's amazing to see kind of the impact the guys are able to be made. Is it more special being able to play with family members on a week in, week out basis as far as the Denver Outlaws are concerned, considering you guys are from New York, and so you guys get to kind of be in that atmosphere together?
Yeah, 100%. And that's definitely one of the things that, you know, I look forward to most about each season. I'm actually moved to Dallas, and so, you know, coming back to Denver and flying to the games and being able to play with Matt and now my oldest brother has just been crazy fun. You know, Mike tried out for the team, ended up making it, and been playing great in his past games, and he's got the go-ahead for this weekend's game. So, I mean, yeah, playing with my two older brothers, it's, you know, it's kind of transformed from playing in the backyard to now on a bigger, you know, bigger stage, and, you know, wearing the same Outlaws jersey is something that, you know, we're all going to have forever.
Chris, there seems to be a little bit of a comparison between you guys and University of Denver. You both kind of caught the monkeys off you guys' backs this past season. You have a lot of people who played for the University of Denver. How cool is it to experience the fact that not only the fact that your team won a championship, but now guys in the locker room have been talking about their team being able to show the pride that they really weren't able to before as far as winning a championship? How big has it been just for the city of Denver, and have you seen kind of an increase in the interest in lacrosse in the area?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things, just lacrosse has completely exploded out here, and it starts with, you know, the younger kids just eating it up and, you know, supporting lacrosse and the fans too. I mean, we have the greatest fans in the world, you know, coming to all of our home games and supporting us, and, you know, it's starting to be just a great culture, and, yeah, both teams kind of get the monkey off our back with the championships, which is a big relief. And there's definitely a mutual support between the DU team and the Outlaws. We have a lot of guys that are alum and, you know, practicing there and always scrimmage them to start off every fall. So we definitely have a special connection. So it's great to see those guys win a national championship.
There seems to be a real dichotomy of teams between the haves and the have-nots as far as face-off guys are concerned. You guys have one of the haves in Big Anthony Kelly. How big is that for you guys as offensive structure, and how much do you attribute to kind of the amount of possessions you guys are able to receive? Because every player on you guys' team seems like you guys could score at any moment. How big is it to have someone who can give you guys possessions on a night-in, night-out basis above and beyond kind of what normal people expect of a face-off guy?
I mean, it's huge. I mean, anyone who knows lacrosse knows how big and important face-offs are. You know, face-offs and ground balls, they win games. And having a guy like Anthony, it's huge for our team. It gives our offense possession times and gives us chances to score. So, I mean, we were just watching the Chesapeake DU replay game, and I mean, he just, you know, he dominated, and that was huge for our team. You also got to give credit to the wing play guys like my brother Matt and Kenny Clawson, who, you know, as a package, as a team, they're just always on the same page. You hear them talking at practice, you know, trying to figure out, you know, the X's and O's and where they should be, and you know, we do a great job with that, and that, you know, turns out into, you know, to our success.
And last one for me, and I'll toss you over to Tom. But this weekend, you personally were able to notch a hat trick, and you guys kind of had a little bit more of a team that you guys expect to have later in the season. I mean, obviously, you guys had a couple people from the championship game, but this was a huge win for you guys, beating Chesapeake by 7. What does that say about where this team is moving forward as far as you guys defending a championship, and how confident are you guys moving forward?
You know, definitely anytime you get a win, especially at home, you're feeling good. We knew going into the game that the Chesapeake was pretty beat up. You know, they're missing a lot of their key players. So we got to be ready for them, you know, going into the next game when we go to Chesapeake. But, you know, anytime you can get a win on, you know, a win, it's huge. And so the team's definitely feeling good. We got a quick turnaround here. We got a Friday night, another home game. So we got to be, you know, ready to go in this next one.
Hey, Chris, it's Tom. You played for a Virginia team that transformed itself throughout the season, broke through, won a national title after a tumultuous season, to say the least. Then you come to Denver, expectations are high. Every year you're there, and finally they break through. So really, two kind of breakthrough surprise teams. Is that just because of the work the guys are putting in? You know, what's the attitude like to have the team break through like that?
Sure. You know, it's funny you say that because I've been, you know, on a lot of great teams, and the best teams are not always the teams that win the championship. Lacrosse is a funny game. It's about momentum and, you know, clicking at the right time. You know, you're going to have injuries. Things are going to happen. You know, dealing with adversity. You know, so, you know, in terms of lacrosse, you just got to always keep playing, and you never know what's going to happen. You just got to get hot at the right time. I think that's what kind of happened with the Outlaws, and then in 2011 when we won the national championship, we just, you know, we clicked at the right time. And it's also funny that both those years that we won it were years that we struggled during the regular season with, you know, we had more losses than we typically did, and, you know, came together as a team and, you know, just tried to get it done and ended out with, you know, success.
And speaking of injuries, too long ago, you led the league in goals. I mean, you led the league for the entire season. The next year you come back, have a couple of injury issues. Scoring isn't everything in the game, but your personal scoring is down a little bit. Is that a function of the offense? Is that just how, you know, the new pieces have meshed together?
Sure. I've missed out on a few games. Last year, like you said, I got hurt in the Charlotte game, which put me out for more games than I would like. And this year, I actually was coaching in Texas, and my team made it to the state championship. So I had to miss out on two games, which I was really bummed out, but happy for my high school team. But, you know, I think the ball is moving great. And, you know, looking in this last game, you had four guys getting hat tricks, which is, you know, pretty incredible. So as long as we keep that ball moving, I think, you know, we're going to generate a lot of goals through a lot of different players this year, which is awesome to see.
And speaking of players and changing, everybody asked the question about the three brothers being together and how great that is. But on the flip side of that, your brother kind of loses his job or his starting spot to John Grant Jr. coming back. Is there, you know, how is that emotionally for you as far as, You miss out on playing with your brother, but you do bring in one of the best there's ever been.
Right. I mean, that's kind of how the league works. You know, Mike, while he was here, he played absolutely phenomenal. I don't think he could have played any better games. You know, he was, you know, fifth in goals in the league in the games he played. And then, you know, there's always going to be guys coming in and coming out. You got, you know, the new college kids coming in, and you know, everyone deserves a chance. There's just, you know, there's just too many good players out there and not enough teams and not enough roster spots. So it's always a battle. Teams are always changing. I'm just happy for Mike, and I'm happy that, you know, he'll be able to, you know, come in this weekend and be able to play for us.
How much of a rivalry is there on the field for you guys to kind of outdo each other? And then above and beyond that, you know, is there, does that help your game by, I guess, trying to outdo your brothers?
You know what? We're definitely very competitive, and that's something that, you know, battling against each other growing up has definitely helped all of our games. And at this point now, I think we're just all enjoying the process. And, you know, obviously we all want to play well, but we're rooting for the other guys even more, you know. And that's kind of happened with when I first got into the league. Matt made it, you know, it's a hard league to adjust to right out of college, and you don't really know anyone. And Matt made that process really easy for me. And, you know, he was giving me tips at halftime. And you know, without him, you know, I don't know if I'd be able to make it in this league. And when Mike come in, we try to do the same thing for him, just feed him with confidence and, you know, try to welcome him and do anything, you know, for him so he can have success.
And Mike is the oldest of the three. And
Mike, yes.
And both you and Matt have an NCAA ring and now an MLL ring. How much crap does he get about that?
You know, I'm sure he wants one. He's had a lot of success and he's done really well. And you know, not to rub it in anything, but my younger sister also has a national championship. But Mike, you know, he's had a, you know, great history. He's coaching college lacrosse, and You know, now he's playing. So I think this is the year so we get Mike another ring.
And last one for me, and I'll let James finish you off. Expectations for the rest of the season, personal, not just team. You know, obviously the team one is obvious, but what about personally?
Personally, you know, I just want to have a fun year. You know, this league is, you know, it's supposed to be enjoyed. It's competitive, but if you're not having fun, you know, there's no point to being in this league. You know, I enjoy it. I love it, and I want to, you know, play lacrosse for as long as possible. So, you know, that's kind of my drive in doing well is because I want to be on the team. I want to be, you know, competing. I want to be in those games, you know, OT games and those battles, and I love it. You know, I thoroughly enjoy the sport, and, you know, I want to play with my brothers, like I said, for as long as possible. So, you know, that's kind of my goal each coming into every single year.
Well, Chris, I don't really think there needs to be any more anything else said whenever you bring in your sister having a championship ring and one of your brothers not having one. I don't know if there's another avenue that I really need to go down or ask another question. But I want to thank you for the time. I want to wish you continued success. You're one of the good guys in the sport. And Tom and I are big fans of yours. And hopefully you guys are able to continue the success you guys have been having. And like I said, thanks for the time. And hopefully you have a great rest of your week.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Thanks a lot. And once again, that's Chris Bocklet joining us. And Tom, I can't help but laugh about that whole, my sister has a championship ring too. That's awesome. But anyway, I digress. Denver this weekend did have a victory, and we talked to him just a little bit about that whole situation, about them beating Chesapeake. And he said a lot about playing with his brothers. And I mean, do you think, like, that's not a huge factor, I don't think. Like, it's a huge factor mentally for, I think a couple guys in the Blacklit crew. But, I mean, is it, do you think, like, having people like that around makes this game a little more fun for guys like that?
Yeah. I mean, he hit the nail on the head when he said he wants it to be fun. And it's all about having a good time. You know, I've pointed it out 100 times that the average MLL check is actually less than the average Walmart bill. So you got to realize that it's really all about having a good time. And that's why these guys do it, and that's what they're playing for. They're playing for, you know, having a good time personally and you know, the fans. They'll all point out that, you know, the little kids and the fans and this pushes them. And Denver does have tremendous crowds. Every year they're one of the top teams out there. Every year teams try to figure out how to do what Denver does. You know, we could have asked Chris questions about the game and how Chesapeake covered them, but he also alluded to the fact that they were missing a lot. Chesapeake was very shorthanded in that game, and it ended up being not a pretty game. You know, the game was broadcast in HD where I live, and Chesapeake was playing in 780p. It was not a good situation. Dave Cottle's team is pretty beat up. Chris had a couple of nice goals. He's got that scorer's touch. He's always been known as a finisher. I think his passing is underrated. He's developed as a player since he came into the league. And he's one of those guys that you can tell he's having a good time out there. And, you know, he sells out his body, takes big hits, makes plays, does what's required of him, and he does it because he's having fun. Just a great group to watch. And, you know, the family's got 3 national championship rings, maybe 4 if Matt – I'm not sure if Matt got 1 or 2, but, you know, there's definitely some competition there. And you know what? That's what one of the things I alluded to in my question. That makes them better. That makes that rivalry better. Not only was Mike fighting for a job and a chance to come back, while he was on the field for them, they're fighting for bragging rights. I mean, you're going to Thanksgiving dinner talking about outscoring your brother and doing those things. It's one of those things that they're fortunate to be teammates, and it's amazing. But you almost wish that, you know, maybe they would. It'd be pretty cool if they weren't on the same team so they could go against each other and really up those bragging rights.
Yeah, it'd be kind of fun to see people at Thanksgiving table just set out championship rings and one person be sitting there basically being the one to have to get the gravy from the kitchen if anyone needs anything. It'd be funny.
Well, but, and I don't have to point out that Chris was given to Denver by Charlotte, but you know he didn't have to point out his sister's ring either.
Oh, well, tell you what, well that does it for Tom Bovey. I'm just kidding. So, we don't need to get in. One day we'll get into Charlotte's trades, and we'll have a whole show about that, I'm sure, just where it could basically be a beat down to me. But that's neither here nor there. One thing I do want to talk about is something that really didn't involve Chesapeake and Denver this past weekend, because a lot of the pieces on those two teams did not really get the chance to play on the field. But you did see a couple rookies get on the field for the first time, make a big impact. I think Sankey from Charlotte scoring 5 goals, obviously the headliner. But you saw the Thompsons get in. I think they combined for 5 points. And they look like they're going to get involved. Chad Tutton got involved a little bit. You didn't really see him a whole lot on the scoring line. But there are a couple players who tend to make a lot of impact on this team and on those teams. And there are also a lot of players who in the future are going to make impact for these rosters. Tom, who stuck out to you as far as the rookies are concerned? Because we can go into the X's and O's of these games all day, every day. But more interesting to me is like where these teams are going, because now the rosters are filled. Now is when the guys are going to come in and everyone's going to get integrated. And now is when the real season starts, now that the rosters are filled. What did you see this past weekend from the rookies, and who do you expect to be making a huge impact moving forward?
Well, obviously the Thompsons, only one of them is a rookie, but at the same time, they are must-watch lacrosse. That has become a team that you have to watch. When we interviewed Kieran McArdle, you know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I said, you know, do you almost feel like you want to say to the GM, hey, I got this. We don't need to make all these moves. And it's even funnier because McArdle's leading the league in points right now, and he's not the guy you talk about on that team right now. He's just a guy for them, and that's bad in my mind, but amazing for the sport, because the Thompsons are a draw. Joe Keegan wrote it in his article that's up on Laxdirt. It's also up on the MLL page, that if you live in one of those cities, you almost have to go to those games to go see them. They are much watch lacrosse, and they are so talented and so good that it's impossible to not want to watch them play. That team is going to do great things, whether or not they win many games. They're just going to be fun to watch. You know, and we haven't seen that many rookies. There's a lot more guys that I'm really excited to see and see what they can do. But, you know, on the flip side, and Joe always gives me a hard time for being the negative one of the group, you got a guy like Mikko Pontrello, and he's a first-round pick, gets traded, and now he's fighting for a job. I mean, I think he's playing to keep his position, and we're only a couple weeks into his career, and he really hasn't done a lot to impress. And regardless of what league it is or anything, there's pressure put on those guys who are first round picks for him to find a way to make plays, and it just hasn't happened so far. He hasn't had that kind of luck.
Yeah, and obviously whenever I talk about the Thompsons, I really consider them. I don't care if someone has 4 years experience, but them playing together I feel like is a big deal. And it's the first year we're really going to see the Thompson brothers in action in the MLL. And you're right, like, they are must-watch television because they play one of the more exciting brands of lacrosse that I've ever seen as far as being a tandem, as far as just being in tune with one another and doing. And I kind of want to go off that real quick because I know that's something that is very interesting to a lot of people, myself included. But the problem is you're right. Like, they're not winning a whole lot of games. Florida is 1-5. And do you think at some point in time this season they can turn that team into something a little bit more of, I'm not going to say a playoff or title contender, but do you think the fortunes of that team can kind of start to flip themselves based off the fact that a lot of these guys now are finally getting to play with each other, even though they don't really have a face-off presence? It seems like this team has the roster to kind of make a second-half turnaround. What are your thoughts about Florida moving forward, and do you think that the impact of the Thompsons and a guy like Chad Tutton, teamed with people like Tucker Durkin on the back end, is going to be able to turn this team around a little bit?
Well, it's the back end where the problems are. That offense is going to be great. That offense is going to find a way to gel. They're going to make plays. They're going to grow as a unit. This past week, I thought they looked like a team that hadn't played together before. And the Thompsons are a whole other story. They almost know where each other is without even looking, without even playing. It's almost like having a mirror on the field where it's two identical players that have slightly different skill sets. They're going to be just fine. Chris Mattis at the faceoff X is going to be just fine. But defensively, they've struggled. They really got lit up from the two-point arc by the machine. They had no defense in that game. They had no way of stopping Ohio from scoring. Brett Queener played probably the worst game I've seen him play in his entire career. He just couldn't get it done. He just couldn't find the ball, couldn't see the ball, couldn't track the ball, and Ohio took total advantage of that. You know, Durkin and Lawrence have been good. The rest of that defense, I'm sorry to say, they've been below average. I like Reed Acton a lot. I think he's a great guy. I like his ability when he has the ball in his stick, but his on-ball defense so far this season has been subpar.
One thing I did want to ask you about, looking at the standings, is we've got a kind of every year we see a log jam in the middle, and this year is no different. We have four teams basically sitting at 3-3 with Duval Machine, Chesapeake, Boston, and Rochester. However, when you look at goal differentials for all of these teams, it seems to be relatively close. Every team is sitting basically to an even differential when you add them all together. I mean, when you look at a team like Ohio, they're 3 ahead. Chesapeake's 1 ahead. Boston's 1 behind. Rochester's 8 behind. Is one of these teams, now that they're going to get an influx of a little bit of help in rosters, more dangerous than the others? And do you really consider one, maybe two of these teams separating themselves from the pack? Because I think we've kind of established the fact that New York and Denver are good. And we established the fact that Florida and Charlotte are bad. And then you kind of have this middle unit. Is there a team that, with the influx of rookie talent, you look to make kind of a leap into not necessarily the great category, but maybe the good category?
Yeah, you know, obviously my pick is Rochester, but I'm not going to go there right now. I'm going to take Ohio and Boston. I think they have shown the most potential to move forward. The Ohio offense is figuring it out. They're starting to figure out how to put goals on the board. They do still miss Logan Schuch. There's no doubt about it. That big body, able to take a check, able to take a hit, able to stand his ground presence isn't there. And that lefty cannon isn't there. Zach Palmer and Jimmy Daly have filled in. Jimmy Daly, I think, could be very, very dangerous if he would stop dancing. He cuts as good as anybody in the league. The problem is he cuts it up so much it looks like origami on the field. He needs to make a decision and stick with it and go. And I think he'd be just fine. They played without Steele Stanwyck this week, and it didn't show. That's bad for Steele. I'm sorry to say that's not a good thing when you're not present and your team looks just as good without you. Boston, on the other hand, God, I picked them to win four games. I figured they would win four games this season, and they're already almost all the way there. That offense looks dangerous. They've improved tremendously on the offensive end. Davey Emela, Kevin Buchanan, Will Manny is a trio that is as good as any in the league right now, the way they've been playing, the way they feed off of each other, the way they play with such a high energy. That's the key for Boston, excuse me, is that high energy play on offense and defense. Scott Ratliff has been tremendous. Their defense hasn't 100% gelled, but now they're going to get Brody Merrill back after the NLL season is over. They're going to get better. You're bringing in a veteran leader who's arguably one of the best players to ever play the game. They'll be just fine. And that makes them a dangerous team. Both of these teams have improved defensively this season. Both of these teams have great offenses. They're both going to be in a position to make a run to the playoffs. The trouble is they're probably going to have to run through each other to do it.
Yeah, you mentioned Boston. And one thing I want to touch about Boston that's really interesting to me is the fact that last year, if you look at what Boston was able to do, they scored 2 two-pointers throughout the course of the season. And a lot of that's personnel. And a lot of people want to talk about, you know, grippy ball situation and what have you. But this year they scored 8 They've scored 8 2-point goals. Last year, the leader was Charlotte with 9. And so this team is doing things a lot differently than what we expected of them. And they are, as a roster, making a lot more impactful. I think the addition of a guy like Adam Gettleman is huge for them. He's been playing exceptionally well. So is Jordan Burke. And their back end is a lot better than what I thought it was going to end up being. And to jump to another portion of the league,
I want to jump back to your previous
God.
Point.
As long as you're not going to talk about Adam Gettleman, God, here we go.
Gettleman and Burke, interesting situation. Both have played very well. Both have played not exceptionally well, but both have played at a high level. My problem with that situation is Coach Tucker needs to pick one. You can't pop in and out. You might allow the guy who has the best practice to be the starter the following week. I'm okay with that. If you have an open competition where the best man wins, the problem is you can't switch goalies at halftime. Not between these two guys. These are not Brett Queener guys that are more than willing to say, I'll take the second half. These guys want to compete against each other. They both want to start. They both want to show what they can do. Somebody needs to win that job. When Boston has won games this season, they've stuck with one goalie.
Yeah, I understand that point. However, with Brody coming back, now it's going to be kind of one of those situations where I think now you choose the person you're going to have moving forward. It's interesting to see what this team has done with the dual goalie aspect. I know Jordan played this past weekend against a Charlotte team that doesn't necessarily challenge you in a lot of ways besides a Sankey flurry. So I don't really know kind of how you want to view what they did this past weekend. But I agree with you in a lot of ways. I think that in talking to Adam for the past couple of years, I think he is willing to just get in wherever he can get in and make the impact that he can, hopes that he wins the job. But I don't think any goalie wants to be the guy for a half and then see someone else go in, especially if they're playing well, especially if you've promised one guy to be going in the second half and you've only allowed, say, 4 or 5 goals, then what do you do? Like, it's a dangerous game that Tucker's playing at this point in time. But do you think the influx of the college draft picks that they've made, especially a guy like Brody Merrill coming in, is going to affect that? Or do you think this is going to kind of be how Tucker's going to roll with this moving forward in the season?
Oh, well, Tucker's son is going to play. There's no doubt in my mind that his son is going to find a way onto the field for that team. They also picked up Tyler German, who got a few runs this past week. Didn't get enough runs for me to say he played well or played bad. He wasn't on the field enough for him to really be noticed. Getting Brody Merrill back is priceless. There's no question. When he retires, they'll change the Defensive Player of the Year award to the Brody Merrill Award, and they rightfully should. It was basically him and Lee Zink fighting for that award since the award was created at the first season of MLL. It's just, they're just so talented, and Denver has shown that it misses Lee Zink. And Brody Merrill, you know how much better it would be if we could see him from the start of every season, but it's just not going to happen. He is so talented. I hope he plays 10 more years. I don't know that it's possible, but I hope he does. He's going to add a lot to that team. A player who I talk to just about at least once a week, if not more, Scott Ratliff, said today, you know, they're going to have a lot coming in when he comes, and they know that. And he's going to add a lot to that team, and I agree. I couldn't agree more. He's a big piece. How their rookies step in and play and what their rookies are able to do is going to go a long way into determining how far this team goes, though.
Yeah, Boston's going to be an interesting case study and to see exactly kind of what they're going to be moving forward. You mentioned a team like Rochester being another team that's kind of interesting. I feel like with the losses this past offseason, they're going to need a little bit more time to kind of figure out kind of who they are, because they didn't have that extremely high draft pick that's going to come in and change the culture, and they're already on the wrong side of goal differential, and they've not seemed like they're going to really piece all together in time. Ohio is a team that, to me, is exceptionally interesting just because they seem like the biggest candidate to make the jump between being kind of good and maybe possibly a team that can contend with the best teams in the league moving forward in the season. And speaking of the best teams in the league moving forward in the season, we've kind of passed a time where I think what we need to start doing is almost giving a percentage for this, because this kind of seems like almost a foregone conclusion when you look at it sometimes, because you see how well the Wizards have been able to play throughout the course of the season. And they are 6-0, and they've gone through a pretty tough stretch moving forward. And Tom, we've been going for a week, so we really didn't get a chance to talk about them. I know they're off this week, but if you were to give them a percent chance of going undefeated, and I'm not talking undefeated regular season, I'm talking undefeated all the way, because we've seen a team like the Outlaws 2 years ago, or two or three years ago, whenever they lost to Charlotte, go undefeated throughout the course of the regular season. But now this is a deeper league. You're playing stiffer competition every week. How much of a chance do you give this New York team, from what you've seen of them, for going undefeated throughout the course of the season? This might be a little early, but still, I mean, it feels like this team is kind of on its way to doing something historic.
100%. 100% chance. I'm going to take the limb. You extend it, and I'm going to take it. 100% chance. There's nobody in the league that stacks up with this roster. There's nobody in the league. Every team they face every single week knows it. Every team they face every single week is going to give them their best shot. Everybody's going to try, you know, they got the target on their back. Everybody knows what this team is. Everybody talks about this team. Everybody's already discussing how great their start is, if they're the best team ever. Yeah, I think they're going to go undefeated. The Lizards, if they lose, it will be due to an injury or due to something else. But that 25-man roster is sick. It's absolutely crazy how good they are. Then you've got the fact that Hakeem Lehke, a rookie, sitting on the rookie enactment and start for just about any team in this league. He's going to be a better pro than he was a college player. Ryan Walsh is another guy that many teams have tried to pry away from New York. He's a goal scorer. He could play that Matt Gibson role for them, fill in that Matt Poske role. He'll be another player that I think should be a starter in this league, might not get meaningful minutes for New York. This team is so stacked, it's scary. They're going to be able to pick and choose who's going to play towards the end of the season, maybe reward some guys that have been on the practice squad or stuck with them all year and didn't get meaningful minutes. But, you know, Ned Crotty's his role has been reduced the last couple of games, and he hasn't had the huge impact on games, and they're still rolling over teams. Boston gave them their best shot early. They put a little scare into them. They let New York know that they're still a little bit vulnerable, and they had some issues, but this team is going to continue to add players. Luke Dupree hasn't seen the field yet, and every GM I talked to said that guy's an all-star. So it's going to be crazy how good they are, and I don't know if it's a discussion of if they're going to go undefeated. I think that's very possible unless they rest too many guys. I think now the conversation needs to turn to, is this the best MLL team we've ever seen?
Well, that is one hot sports take by Tom Bovee. No, I mean, like, I agree with you on some aspects of everything. Like, I think this is the deep.
Let's visit that discussion. All right. We'll talk about that right now. I'll go into that. Find me another sport, and maybe not arguably. I'm safe to say this. The four best players, maybe five. If I'm not sure about Fletcher, so I'm going to say four. The four best players at their positions all played on the same team. And even more so, the two unquestionable best players in the world at the sport play on the same team. I don't know that that's ever happened in any other sport at any other time.
I mean, I'm sure you can, I mean, without doing any research or any sort of collective issue on that, I'm sure you can look back to some old teams. I'm sure the Celtics back in the day, like you have Russell, Havlicek, Hondo, like you have a couple players on those teams. I'm sure you could probably put up against this team, but I think in the modern era, when you're dealing with an 18 league instead of a 30 team league, I think you're getting into a gray area where it's easier for the four best players to end up on one roster, especially when we know how the rosters work in this league. So I think you're kind of playing with a loaded gun there as far as making those claims. If you're going to compare it to every other sport, I think it's much more apt to compare this to what it is. And I think that this is the most loaded MLO roster, however, of all time. Like, you got to look at just who the players are, what they've done. The celebrity factor is off the charts for this team and everything else. However, doesn't win the championship, who gives a rip? You know, we've seen other teams do this. And the thing is, there's a team that's out there right now that I can point to. This team hasn't played yet. They have not played the Denver Outlaws yet. The Denver Outlaws are a team that's kind of lurking as the team that everyone's talking about, but no one is talking about. Because everyone, when you get to the championship discussion, you talk about the Lizards. And you talk about exactly what you're talking about. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not arguing against what you're saying. I'm just saying the fact that I'm not going to crown them 100% anything until you play the second-best team in your league. Now, they might go in and beat Denver by 6 goals and just trounce them both times they play them. And then you can start chucking around the 100%, like, they're the best team ever, blah, 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 blah. However, at this point in time, they have not played the second-best team in your league, and I find it strange that you, of all people, are chucking around the 100% thing when it doesn't seem like that this team has faced any sort of – this is like the Bulls not facing the Jazz in the late 90s. Like, you don't play them. You just kind of trounce your way. You win 72 games, you're done. You have to play the Jazz. No, you're done. This is the same way, you know, the Red Wings not having to play the Avalanche in the playoffs. This is the Patriots not having to play the Ravens. I mean, so far this season, we've seen them play a lot of teams. The roster just now being filled. And so I don't know if 100% is the way I would go. I see what you're saying, but I think at the same point in time, you've got to give the rest of the league a little bit more credit than 100%, specifically when there's the defending champion Denver Outlaws waiting in the wings, and we're not even going to see them play each other until after July 4th. And so it's kind of one of those interesting situations where, yes, injuries can happen, and yes, other extenuating circumstances can happen. However, teams at 100%, Denver has an actual shot to beat this team, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Denver is the team that has a shot to do it. The trouble is who's favored in that game? I mean, are you putting down money on Denver to win that game? I think New York is the favorite to win every game from here on out. An injury to Gerenlian would be the only thing that might change the impact the way that game would go. I haven't been that impressed with Denver's defense. I've seen them play good offense, but Schwartzman has not had his best season. Drew Adams has not been tested like he would be against the Denver team. But it's tough for me to even consider, you know, I've watched every minute of every game this season and probably the last two or three. But at the same time, I don't know if in 15 years of watching MLL games, I've seen a team as good at every facet of the game. That's the trouble with New York is they lose Kyle Hartzell. He goes down with an injury and you don't notice it. You don't notice that they're not still the same team. The player, and that's the reason two weeks ago when we did the show, I crowned him my MVP, is Gerenlian. I mean, he's facing off at 80%. That's unheard of in this league. And he is probably the guy that I would point to and say, if he goes down, they're in trouble. And probably Drew Adams. Those are your two most important guys on this team, because everyone else has a backup who's either an all-star or could be an all-star or has been an all-star. Those two guys are the catalyst for this team. And I know no other team matches up with those two at that position.
See, I would almost disagree with what you're saying, because I think that when you look at the two people, like if you're going to look at a team, and even if you pick these guys out of just a bucket, and you say, like, who are the two people who in their positions match up with Drew Adams and Greg Grenlian, you pick out Schwartzman and Anthony Kelly.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't. Maybe Kelly. You could. You know, I could see you saying that Kelly can lock horns with Grenlian and take him so that and make him look semi-human. I think that's possible to say that Grenlian's only going to go 55% against Kelly. I'll agree with that. But you're lying to yourself, and you're living in a season from a couple of years ago, or when he was doing his best to make Team USA and make a huge impression, because Schwartzman might have won a championship, but he wasn't the factor in that game that he should have been. He is not the dominant goalie that he's given credit for. He makes the plays he should, not all of them, and he struggled this year. I mean, he really has. He struggled behind a defense that's trying to find a way to gel. And I don't think he's a top four goalie in the league right now. I don't see that in his game. I don't see him having that kind of ability right now. And, you know, Drew Adams is still, if not the best goalie in the world, he's 1A to, or he's 1B to somebody's 1A, because he's ridiculous.
No, I mean, I agree with you on some level. I don't think there's Drew Adams being in a place where I think Drew Adams is incredible. Like, please do not make this an argument where I don't think Drew Adams is amazing. But at the same time, New York really hasn't, like, at the end of games when people are just firing from all cylinders and firing in places where their offense isn't running, I think it's almost, you're almost a benefit of your team at that point in time. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm not trying to say that I think anything less of Drew Adams. Like, once again, please don't make it about that. But I think at the same time, when you're up by 6 or 7 goals starting in the fourth quarter, you're not exactly seeing the team's best shots. You're just seeing shots. And that makes it a little easier to kind of maintain what you're going through. And that's not an endorsement for anybody else. It's just saying that I think that the gap between Drew Adams and other goalies might not be that chasm that you're giving it credit for.
Adams hasn't been tested this year. No one, except for maybe that first Boston game, has really tested Drew Adams. He has not had to stand on his head. He has not had to go out and win a game for this team. But that's because they are so good at every other aspect of the field. I mean, this is a team with Tommy Palasek playing as a fourth attackman / fifth, sixth offensive midfielder. They don't have a spot for him. And the guy's a former All-Star and has the ability to be one this year. They are so deep and so good that as long as Spelina puts them in a position to win and makes the right adjustments throughout a game, it's going to be really, really hard to find a way to stop them, because, you know, you only get 4 long poles. And even then, most teams don't have 4 superstar stud quality long poles to cover that team.
No, and I agree. And I think it's the exact same way where if someone's going to throw out the argument that Adams has allowed the most 2-point goals, well, that's because teams have to shoot 2-pointers on him. So he's probably saved the most 2-point shots. I think it all kind of works in tandem. But I also think that if you really look at some of the goalies this season, there are guys, like you said, who've been tested more. So and that's why I can't give New York 100% go-ahead, because I do think you're right. A lot of things that you're saying, I think that you're right. 4 poles, that's it. That's all you get. And who are you going to cover? Who are you going to double when they come off a pick and roll at the top of the key at this point in time? Like, what do you do at some point in time against this roster? But if you're going to pick a team that's going to be able to suit up with the firepower that New York has, they still haven't played the team that's going to be that team. And if they blow through Denver on July 9th, then watch out. We might be seeing a team that might just steamroll the league. Because I think that at any point in time, if you're going to list a team as the best ever, you list a team as the best roster on paper, But if you're going to listen to the best ever, you've got to have a ring to go along with it. And I think that until we do that, I'm not willing to crown them anything else besides the paper, I guess, paper best ever.
Yeah, absolutely. New York has sold out to win a title this season. They admit it. They are fully invested in a moonshot this year. And they did it. I mean, they put together a roster that's very capable of doing it. It's no guarantee. I mean, we're not that far removed from watching a Denver team go undefeated in the regular season and then not make the championship. So, you know, that's fresh in everyone's mind. But it's difficult to say. You know, Chris Bocklet said it. The best team doesn't always win the championship. And that's something New York has to prepare themselves for. Again, you know, I've said it several times. This championship, I don't think, is necessarily riding on Rob Pinnell or Paul Rabel or Joe Fletcher or Drew Adams or Greg Renlian. I think it's riding squarely on the shoulders of Joe Spolina, putting them in a position to win it because they are the favorites. And the gap between them and Denver, as far as, you know, if we actually got to see Vegas odds, would be a chasm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think New York beat favored by 3 or 4 goals easily. Now, with that being said, Tom, we're about to run up to the end of time, and this has been a debate that I think we'll probably revisit next week when we have the input of either Tim or Joe, depending on trivia constraints on some of our co-hosts. But what I want to know from you real quick, in a quick minute, give me a preview of this weekend. Because this weekend is, once again, just a big weekend in MLL lacrosse. And now we've got MLL lacrosse is redundant. But either way, we've got a bunch of big games this weekend. Which game are you looking most forward to? And what do you expect to come from the weekend?
You know, we got Chris Bocklet said they got an early game out in Denver. That should be a good one. We got a Friday night matchup. All the rest of the games have finally been moved up to Saturday. They're all going to be great. I really want to see step two of Florida, though. I want to see game two to see how those guys are able to get together, see how they're able to gel, see if they're able to put together the magic that they had in college when you pair them with other players of their caliber. I mean, Casey Powell, Kieran McArdle, this team is built to be an offensive juggernaut, and how they're able to get that going is going to be the thing. And again, I point to Joe's article and what he had to say and say that it's difficult as a true fan of the league and as a true fan of the players for me not to look at them and say, how can you not want to watch them every single week? They're just going to be a team that's fun to watch, and because you never know what they're going to be able to do. But I want to see all these games, but Florida is a team I feel I need to watch this weekend.
Yeah, I think now you have a couple teams that are must-watch, which is something that, every year you and I watch every game, I think. And I think that a lot of diehards watch every game. But eventually you have to have teams that are going to be must-watch. And now New York, must-watch. I think Denver, must-watch. Florida, must-watch. And I think you should avoid the Hounds at this point in time. I hate to say it, but gosh, I really don't like watching that team at this point in time until they can kind of figure out their stuff. But either way, that's going to do it for us. Once again, I'm joined by Tom Bovee. Make sure you read everything he's doing on laxdirt.com. Same way with Joe and Tim and everybody else. It's great insight, and hopefully everyone's able to kind of tune in on all that. We'll be back next Tuesday, hopefully with Joe, Tim, or maybe just me and Tom. You never know. I mean, this has been fun regardless. We'll have a bunch of guests, and we'll try to entertain you guys, give you guys the insights that no one else gives you. And like I said, hopefully everyone has a great week. Enjoy the games. Their games all weekend. Hopefully Memorial Day went great. And other than that, I will sign off for both of us. And like I said, hope you guys have a great week, and we will talk to you guys 1 week from today, 6 days, 23 hours, and we look forward to talking to you then. Thanks.